40 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha. Always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, your home for original reporting.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper in Chicago. President Biden makes his first formal remark since the U.S. was recently involved in shooting down four high-flying objects. The first was a Chinese surveillance balloon. Mr. Biden says of the other three,
the intelligence community's current assessment is that these three objects were most likely balloons tied to private companies, recreation or research institutions studying weather or conducting other scientific research.
Newly enhanced military radar picked up the three objects on three consecutive days as they floated from east to west at the same height commercial airliners use. At least one hobby group has already come forward to say that their homemade balloon went missing last Saturday, the same day an object was taken out over Canada's Yukon territory.
That's CBS's Nancy Cordes reporting. President Biden says the White House is developing sharper rules for when to shoot down unidentified objects in the sky. After visiting the site of a recent toxic train derailment, Environmental Protection Agency Administrator Michael Regan tells East Palestine, Ohio residents that the air continues to remain safe to breathe, but they do not yet have definitive results about the drinking water.
Until test results are received, the Ohio Department of Health has recommended that residents use bottled water.
A difficult diagnosis for action star Bruce Willis and his family, CBS's Steve Futterman explains.
There is no treatment or cure for frontotemporal dementia. The condition results in parts of the brain slowly withering away. CBS's Dr. David Agus.
The average life expectancy after a diagnosis is kind of 5 to 6 years. And over time, at the severe level, which he is now, health declines in a very precipitous way.
Last year, it was announced that Bruce Willis was retiring from acting because of another related condition that made it difficult for him to understand and communicate. Steve Futterman, CBS News, Los Angeles.
Small parts of a special grand jury's report in Georgia have been released. The panel had been looking into attempts by then-President Trump and others to overturn the 2020 presidential results. CBS's Robert Costa in Atlanta.
What we're seeing today is a glimpse into an ongoing investigation with these snippets of a grand jury, special grand jury report. And we're learning that they do believe some crimes may have taken place when it comes to perjury, lying by witnesses.
Signs of life are still emerging from the mountains of rubble in Turkey and Syria following last week's deadly earthquakes. A 42-year-old woman was rescued from a southeastern province in Turkey today. A stunned family member says they had prepared her grave. Many in the affected zones are facing a dire situation with freezing conditions, no food, water, and toilets. On Wall Street, the Dow closed down 431 points. This is CBS News.
WAUK 540 AM, New Berlin's choice for news talk radio. Streaming 24/7 at waukradio.com.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. Here's what you need to know. Conditions going from bad to worse on the freeways in and around Milwaukee. A few stretches of interstate were shut down as of midday. They include I-43 northbound, the Cedarburg exit, I-41-94 northbound in Racine County, and two southbound lanes of I-41-94 in Oak Creek. Governor Evers says he wants Wisconsin workers to have up to 3 months of paid family and medical leave. It's part of his proposed budget for the next 2 years that spends nearly $104 billion.
Doing what's best for our kids is what's best for our state and what's best for our families and workforce, too.
Lawmakers now rewrite and pass the budget that then goes back to Evers. The new budget is due to take effect in July. In sports, Marquette beat Xavier with a last-second shot last night, 69-68. The Bucks are at Chicago tonight. I'm Terry Bell, and this is Civic Media News.
Civic Media promised you something big to celebrate our new and still growing network of radio stations. When we announced the one-day $1 million advertising giveaway for Wisconsin businesses, you responded.
Just wanted to echo your sentiments about the advertising. That's really a cool deal and really remarkable.
$1 million of free advertising. Now, if you missed this chance to work with our team, go to civicmedia.us and click on the sponsorship tab. One of our local sales pros will get right back to you. Civicmedia.us and sponsorship.
Max Inc. Radio, we are local music with Pete from the Skin Tones.
Here, you have been warned. Not only Madison, the rest of Wisconsin and the U.S., Skin Tones, we're coming at you. We're going to be committing rock atrocities. We're fit. We're in shape. We are tight. We are muscular. We are attractive for our ages. And we are sexy as hell.
Listen to Max Inc. Radio Saturday nights, 6 p.m. to midnight on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Hey, this is Jim Santel. I am the host of Morning Cannolis. Every single Saturday morning from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m., we talk about the major stories in law, in government, and the aspiration for justice in America. Delighted to have you join, call in, and be a part of our discussion right here on the networks of Civic Media.
WAUK 540 AM. Brookfield's choice for news talk radio. Streaming 24/7 at waukradio.com. A progressive voice from Manitowoc to Janesville. WAUK 540 AM. Always streaming at WAUK Radio.
Podcast and never miss a minute.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here today on the big program. Lots to get to, lots to talk about. Good news, the president, healthy, vigorous, 80 years old, fit to successfully exercise duties of the presidency, according to his physician, and the right wing lost their minds. And not surprising, not surprising. All of the craziness, all of the ageism that goes on the right is what it is. Also, sadly today, my friend John Fetterman, Pennsylvania senator, his office announced that Senator Fetterman checked himself into Walter Reed National Military Medical Center to receive treatment for clinical depression. He's receiving treatment on a voluntary basis. Look, guy went through a stroke. Guy went through something pretty serious. And what I find interesting, again, it's one of these moments where, as a country, we can't just go, you know what? I wish the best for him. I hope he comes out of this. I hope he gets the treatment that he needs. I hope he gets the help that he needs. I hope we have a system that can help. Decent people do that. I've never wished ill on someone I disagree with. Now, what I find interesting is how the right wing is spinning this. Again, we have mental health problems in this country that we need to address. Policy might be helpful. But immediately the right wing is going, well, he's got mental problems. He should resign. You know, here, all of this stuff. And my favorite little spin on Senator Fetterman's condition and situation is the right wing argument that, well, you see, this is the left abusing poor victims. And you got to love the creativity that they've come up with, that this is, you know, this is his wife abusing him. This is, you know, the Democrat, or my favorite was the Democrats. Yeah, they've got to do it. They're evolving. They're coming around to new names. But I find it interesting that the argument is now, because they really cared about him. They care about John Fetterman. They care about his health. They care about his mental being. Now, again, during the campaign, did they help or did they make his condition worse? The constant attacks, not just on his health, but on his character and his person. Now they care. And I got to be honest, I find it really very disingenuous. Now, from my perspective, again, I want John to get better. I've known John for 15 years. He's been a friend of the show all that time. Our heart goes out to Giselle and the kids and the family and everyone, and in the hope that they get the help that they need. And here's the thing. I know John's going to get the best care possible. I know that he has the ability to get what he needs to get him back up on his feet. And I have full faith in our system to help him. Where my mind went today was, now imagine if this wasn't John Fetterman, the senator. Imagine if this was just John Fetterman, you know, the guy who was driving the UPS truck like he did at one point, or the guy who's, you know, out digging ditches, or the guy who's, you know, working for a living in other jobs that, you know, maybe they don't have insurance. Or maybe worse yet, they're underinsured and thought, hey, I'm going to be okay. At least I've got the insurance that'll cover my treatments for my illness. And if I need some mental health help, maybe some treatment for that. Sadly, most insurance plans don't. So surprise, not only are you dealing with your illness, which in his case was this stroke, you're now dealing with the fight to get the treatment that you need. And if you do have depression, if you do have problems coming out of it, then you're going to have to fight to get the care that you need because it isn't accessible to most people. This is the weird part of our system. And again, I'm told we got the best health care in the world, Rick. Don't you know it? Yeah, but here's the thing. If you can afford it. Now, I look at John and, you know, I look at John as I look at myself. I have never been sick really in my life. I've never really had any serious ailments. Little bumps around the road, but you know, hey, you know, I'm a big, strong guy, gonna get beyond it. You know, John was that guy. He was that guy who beat himself up, that guy who was always working. And look, there's gonna be a mental down. And I was talking about this today with some friends. I'm going, you know, I get the depression thing. You know, my generation never talked about depression. It was something that we'd, you know, just get over it, tough it out. But there are true moments that, you know, medical conditions like this bring on depression and that need to be treated. Especially when you're looking at somebody who's in the prime of his life, big, strong guy, you know, the walks into a room and people, you know, oh, there's a monster over there. Now having to deal with the realities that he's not that guy anymore. The realities that he's going to have some limitations. And you know... Again, I go back to, fortunately, he has the best insurance and the best opportunity to get care. But the vast majority of us don't. You know, and again, I go back to that. You know, what if he was uninsured and having to fight to get anything? What if he was underinsured and having to deal with all the bills that are going to come that, hey, I thought these were covered. Sorry, you've got co-pays and co-insurance and co-deductibles and deductibles and out of pocket and out of network and out of this, out of that, out of your mind. You've got all of these things that you would have to deal with in this moment. Instead of just having a system that says, you need help, we're going to help you. Now the Republicans have a plan, and they're very honest about it, and it fits on a bumper sticker: pay or die. If you can't afford the care, sorry, better luck next time. That's always been their plan. When they were doing the repeal and replace thing, do you remember their plans coming out? Do you remember what they were telling us at the time? Oh yeah, nothing, because they don't really have a plan. Pay or die seems like all you've got. If you can afford it, well, you get the help you need. If not, well, shame on you. And this comes back to all of our social programs. This comes back to all of the things that we depend on and hope that we can get from our government. And, you know, I was having one of those moments where I was thinking about, you know, actually, I was thinking about my high school government teacher who was, you know, I remember at the time, you know, when I was in school going, you know, how do you know, you know, which political party you belong to? You know, how do you know if you're right or left? How do you know if you're a Democrat or a Republican? How do you know that? And he explained it very simply going, look, you know, the reality is, in his view, it was Democrats care for the very poor. The needy, the poor, the downtrodden, the folks who are struggling to get by. Republicans care for the very wealthy. Big wealthy in the corporations. And then ask the question, which do you want to pay for? Because everyone in the middle, you're going to pay for both of them. So deciding which party you belong to or which side of the fence you're on, so to speak, you've got to decide which you're okay paying for and which you want your money to go more towards or less towards. And it made perfect sense as a, you know, ninth grade student, as a 15-year-old, going, yeah, that makes a lot of sense, you know, because I grew up poor. So, yeah, I want to help those people. I want to help people like me. I want to help people to be able to get a hand up and to get a job and do all those things. So someone sent me this clip today of George Carlin that I thought was just spot on accurate. And, you know, look, at the end of it, you know, I miss George Carlin. But, you know, his commentary spot on. But here's George Carlin here, you know, giving his take on the right and on the left and where they believe.
You know, the difference that I define the difference between right wing and left wing, people to the right of center. Well, let's start with the people to the left. People to the left of center, liberals, Democrats, populists, they're interested in people, human beings and human values. People to the right of the line, Republicans and rich people and right wingers, they're interested in property, not people. And they're soulless. They're without soul. They don't really care. These Christians don't do Jesus' work, which is to feed the poor and take care of the ones who can't help themselves. That's what their Jesus said. Feed those who have no way. To take ones who have to have nothing to going for them. Help them in my name. Don't even want to know about it. Where's that tax return I get? I want my what do they call it? The rebate.
No, I mean, to me, that is right there is the perfect statement right there. And thank goodness for George Carlin, and really thank goodness for my high school government teacher, because the reality is this is where we are, and in this moment, and it's spot on accurate. So I come back to this, the fact that, you know, and again, thank goodness John's going to get the best care he can need. He deserves and needs, and we should want that. But we have a system that's saying, well, you know, not for everybody. You know, we've got a Republican Party that's against capping insulin prices. We've got a Republican Party that says Medicare doesn't get to negotiate for prescription drug prices. We've got a Republican Party who's just, oh my God, I can't believe you're going to hold us accountable for what we said about destroying Social Security and Medicare. And what's interesting, and we've been talking about this, we had that whole Academy Award winning performance by Mike Lee, the senator from Utah, and really the entire Republican Party going, who, us, want to destroy Social Security and Medicare? Oh, how dare you accuse us of that thing that we've been saying for decades? And had this great moment, and good on Biden for going, okay, then this is settled, right? You're not going to do what you said you were going to do? And they're like, oh, we would never. Until, well, the next day when, you know, the Ron Johnsons of the world come out and what the Mike Pence's. Mike Pence on TV said, we have to have a conversation about reforming entitlements in the days ahead. I think, he said, we can replace the New Deal with a better deal. In Social Security, you can keep all the promises you made to seniors and people who retire in the next 20 years. No changes. But for the younger... but give options to younger Americans to invest a portion of their Social Security in private accounts. That's privatization. That's the bad thing that the Bush people wanted to do right before the economy collapsed. And everyone go, dodged a bullet there. Had we privatized Social Security before they collapsed the economy again, seniors would be SOL, really out of luck. And Mike Pence is doubling down, going, oh, we're not cutting. No, not for you. Not for you people who would vote for me today. But screw the unborn. We're going to go after those people down the road and do what they've done masterfully. You got to give them credit. You got to give them credit. They stick to their, we're reforming entitlements. Not destroying your Social Security, the thing that you've paid into and that you've earned. No. You've got presidential candidate Nikki Haley, who said, well, what they need to be doing is looking at entitlements. Look at Social Security. Look at Medicaid. Look at Medicare. They actually go to the heart of what's causing government to grow. And the thing, you know, I can't get out of my mind is we're in this situation where the very people with the same type of ideology that destroyed defined benefit pensions in the workplace decades ago in the corporate world want to do it to the public sector. They want to take away that little bit of security, that little bit of safety, that little bit of, you know, hey, I'm going to be okay in my retirement, that anti-poverty insurance that Social Security was meant to be. They want to take that away and they want to give it to their criminal friends. Wait a second, where have I heard that before? Oh yeah, George Carlin said they want to destroy, they want to privatize Social Security so they can give it to their criminal friends on Wall Street. They want it back. They want your Social Security. And he was right, you know, 20 plus years ago saying they're going to get it because the Republicans are never going to stop in their pursuit to do what they've done to workers in the private sector, to do to everyone in the public sphere, which is steal from you. When they talk about reforming entitlements because government's growing too much and we're spending too much on entitlements, how do you think they're going to rein in that spending? They're going to rein it in by you not getting benefits. They're going to rein it in by you paying more for what you signed up for. That's their goal, so that they can continue to give tax breaks to rich people. They can continue to hand out massive welfare programs to corporate America. And are we surprised by it? Shouldn't be. Shouldn't be at all. But my heart and my thoughts and my prayers, and here's the perfect place to go with thoughts and prayers for John Fetterman and his family as they battle to fight through this moment. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. You got any questions, comments, something on your mind? Email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. Miss any of the program, podcast, wherever you get your favorite podcast, you'll find ours. Quick break. Right back. Stick around.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, Idaho. Got lawmakers in Idaho. Evidently, they want to criminalize the COVID-19 vaccines. You got two of them introduced a piece of legislation. And look, the states are really, you know, Republican states are, especially when they control everything, they let the cat out of the bag. They say the things that they're not supposed to say out loud, well, out loud. And they do it through attempting to push legislation. What they want to do is they want to charge anyone who administers the mRNA vaccine with a misdemeanor. And I got to imagine if you do it again, it ranks up to a felony perhaps. Because, you know, we're going after doctors. Whether they're vaccinating you or, you know, helping women choose what they're going to do with their bodies. We're going to start locking them doctors up. Yeah, crazy times. And look, nothing crazier than this whole balloon thing. You know, Balloon Gate 2023. So we shot down the Chinese spy balloon, which has everybody all airheaded. Let's go with that. And now we've shot down a couple other things. Today, the president gave his first national speech on this topic. Turns out the first one, Chinese spy balloon. Knew that. They knew it was a Chinese spy balloon. They followed it when it lifted off, followed it all across the country. We now find out that they were collecting data from it, jamming transmission, doing all the things that I said they were doing right from the start, they were actually doing. Because, hey, we spend a gazillion dollars on military. They better... So now we've ramped up the radar. Now we want to know more because the public, the skittish public, scared of flying things. And so gave the big speech. And it turns out a lot of the things they just shot down, not Chinese and not spy balloons, but potentially, as this this story goes, according to Aviation Week, one of them was an Illinois-based hobbyist club's balloon that had floated off of path. It was shot down by four heat-seeking missiles launched by the U.S. Air Force on February 10th. And you go, okay, you shot down the hobby balloon. Yay, good job. The president did point out in his speech, look, there are a lot of private interests that float things in the air for non-nefarious purposes, you know, weather balloons and all kinds of stuff. We can't go shooting all this stuff down. Now, as I've been saying, you know, the sad reality is we failed the Chinese test. I said from the beginning, they did this as a trial balloon to see how we would overreact. And congratulations, we failed. Because we had Republicans who were, you know, just losing their minds. And anything to go after Biden, anything to make Biden look bad, anything, see, Biden's weak on balloons. You even had, what's her name, Marjorie Three Names. She had her little balloon like she was going to the circus. It was so cute. You could make a little doll out of it. I'm hoping those folks who make dolls and everything, if they make a train wreck balloon holding doll, I probably will buy it. Or I'm hoping someone sends it to me. Because you got to have that. I mean, it's a collector's item. I mean, she's not doing anything in Congress, so why not? But I do find it interesting that we're all in this tizzy, and there's part of me, and I mean, I'm not being conspiratorial, but there's part of me that goes, you know, we're about to sign the largest defense budget in the history of this country. We're about ready to sign this massive defense budget where people are going, hey, you know, the country's going broke. The debt's so, Republicans losing their minds. We're going to cut Granny's Social Security and put her back on cat food. But the defense budget, sacrosanct, can't touch that because we got to be afraid of something. So there's part of me that goes, look, I remember the Cold War. I remember these kind of antics going, oh, we got to spend more on military. We need Star Wars because the Russians have all this. And we found out they didn't. But here we are in this moment. It seems odd to me that you know, right now is when the defense budget comes through, when the balloon goes by. But we're going to pass this enormous inflated defense budget. At the same time, we're talking about cutting food stamps for low-income families. It just seems strange. I'm not making accusations. I'm not saying there's a conspiracy. I just think that it's strange and convenient. You know, at a time when, you know, the president's got a goal of ending childhood hunger by 2030, we've got Republicans who are trying to end the possibility of ending childhood hunger. We've got a Republican Party that literally wants to take food out of the mouths of children. Oh my gosh, he can't believe he said that. We would never. Don't accuse us of those things that we're doing. No, we would never. No, trust us. We wouldn't steal food off the plates of children, or at least not white children. Oh, did I say that out loud? Oh yeah, the silent part. Right now, you've got the Republicans in the House moving to cut benefits for the SNAP program, the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, SNAP. Stricter work requirements, because they got that out of Clinton back in the 90s. And we've got to get those poor people to work in those crummy jobs that they can't get to. And again, the means testing, all the stuff that they do, instead of saying, hey, you know, how do we make sure that we get people good jobs? You know, I was all in favor of ending welfare if there was a jobs component. There was a job requirement, but there wasn't a jobs program. And I said, look, I'm against welfare. I'm against handout programs. I'm a big fan of job programs. If the private sector won't, or more likely can't, or more likely won't create enough jobs for people, then the public sector's got to do something to step in. And this is where I think that public sector jobs are, you know, the way forward. Now you got the president who is advocating to ending childhood hunger. You've got the former president who's saying, no, when I get back into office, we're going to cut, 75% of public employees, whatever number, I forget the number I threw up, but we're going to go after those government workers, because he knows that buzzword that really gets people all tingly in the panties and upset and angry. This is one of those moments where, you know, you look at the SNAP program, average benefit, I think the maximum is like $230. But this is to put food on the table. These programs have helped us cut childhood poverty enormously. And yet what we've got? We've got a Republican Party hell-bent on destroying this program because they always have wanted to. They've always wanted to take food out of the mouths of children. Are we surprised?
The Shaw 101 FM, your fix for progressive talk from Butler to Windlake. Always streaming at waukradio.com.
CBS News Brief. President Biden says he plans to speak with China's president about the spy balloon shot down off the South Carolina coast. As for a few other flying objects,
we don't yet know exactly what these three objects were.
President Biden confirmed today that the three objects he ordered shot down last weekend probably posed no threat to people on the ground.
CBS's Nancy Cordes. Residents in the East Palestine, Ohio area question how safe they are after a toxic train derailment. EPA Administrator Michael Regan visited the area today and says the train's operator will pay for the damage to the community.
The community has questions and they deserve answers. I want the community to know that we hear you, we see you, and that we will get to the bottom of this.
Action star Bruce Willis has been diagnosed with frontotemporal dementia. CBS News medical contributor Dr. David Agus.
It's certainly very sad that someone of this age has this condition. We do not know the cause of this condition, and there is no treatment for this condition.
CBS News Brief, I'm Jennifer Kuiper.
The Shaw, 101 FM, WAUK 540 AM, Wisconsin's home for rational talk radio.
For Civic Media, I'm Jane Mantner. Here's what you need to know. Money is pouring into the Wisconsin Supreme Court race. Candidate Janet Protasiewicz raised $2 million since beginning her campaign last year. About $300,000 of those dollars came from out of state. Protasiewicz raising more than the other three candidates combined. She's also raised more money from Wisconsin donors than any of her rivals. The primary is next week, February 21st, where two candidates will be chosen to move on to the general election in April. The Great Lakes have the lowest ice cover in 50 years. As of Wednesday, the lakes overall had just over 6.5% ice cover when it should be closer to 40%. This lack of ice cover can help create conditions for algae blooms, which can be toxic to humans and pets. These blooms appear every summer in Lake Erie in the Bay of Green Bay in Lake Michigan. Now algae blooms are happening in Lake Superior as well. I'm Jane Mantner. This is Civic Media News.
Wisconsin's spring primary election is Tuesday, February 21st, and your local Civic Media radio station will be tracking the results.
Special live coverage starts at 7 p.m., and News Director Terry Bell, with a team of political experts, will be following which candidates, both local and in the state Supreme Court race, move on to April.
Spring primary election coverage live, Tuesday, February 21st, starting at 7, here on your local Civic Media radio station, streaming on the Civic Media app.
Pat, I feel like all the women we have on our show, like our co-hosts, always get too famous for us. And then
I would just like to think that we are fertile ground from which they can blossom. We are the manure from which they spring.
The manure from which they spring. I was going to say holding fort, but I think your metaphor is way better.
Up North News Radio with Pat Krylo airs at its new time from 6 to 8 a.m. weekdays across Civic Media.
You know him as the nose tackle for the green and gold, 1993 to 1999, and again 2001 to 2003. 125 games, 292 tackles, 7 sacks, and a Super Bowl ring. But there's more to life than stats, and there's more to life than football. You're about to find out. Under the Helmet with the Gravedigger, featuring Packers legend Gilbert Brown and Earl Ingram. Monday mornings at 8 on The Shaw and on the Civic Media app.
Being a father is an honor, a challenge, a duty, a celebration, and a testimony. I want to be legendary for you because I found everything to live for.
That's dedication. Visit fatherhood.gov to hear more. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
To help push for better, contact theconsumervoice.org.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
Oh my goodness, OMG, my head, as my kid would say. Republicans are well, they care about derailments. What's interesting is, you know, listening to the right wing lose their mind, it's going to be, maybe it's going to be a shock to them when they find out it's their ideology that's responsible for these train derailments. Maybe it'll be a shock, or maybe they actually do know and they're smarter than most give them credit for, that they actually know the harm that they're doing. And this is one of those cases that I talk about a lot. And I ask the question, which is worse? Is it worse if someone is a true believer, they truly believe what they're doing is right, even if it's leading us down the wrong path and it leads to horrible outcomes? And you know, there's a lot of that. Or do they know better, but they're using the true believer to get to their aims, which is deregulating, you know, privatize, profitize, all of the things that the right stands for? You know, which is worse, the true believer who doesn't really know any better, but you think should, or the people who do know better, but do it anyway? I always think that the people who know better, and I look at the F channel and I look at a lot of pundits, they know better. They're just deceiving the others, the ones who are the true believers, who have drank the Kool-Aid, who have, you know, bought the soup, if you will. And this derailment thing is right there, because all you hear now from the right, since they finally found East Palestine, Ohio, on the map, it's like Mecca to them now. You saw J.D. Vance there. You saw a bunch of people there. You know, where's the government? You know, where's Joe Biden? Where's FEMA? Where's that government that we hate so much? Where's that government that we want to defund? Where's that government that we don't think can do anything? Where's that government? It's amazing. It's amazing to me when conservatives get their thing in a twist, that they want government to bail them out. Every time corporate America fails, where's the government to help with a bailout? Every time their ideology fails us, it's always, well, come bail us out. Now, we had another derailment today in Van Buren Township, Michigan, I guess just outside of Detroit. You had one car of hazardous material that derailed. It didn't spill. It didn't explode. They didn't blow it up. But another derailment. And this is another one of those moments where you go, Norfolk Southern, what are you doing? And I come back to, you know, the fact that you look at these right-wing voices. Jim Jordan, for instance, he comes out with a tweet that says, more than a dozen trains have derailed throughout the United States this year. So much for Joe Biden's infrastructure plan. And I saw that in my head hurt. It was one of those things where I'm going, oh, my God, are you that stupid? And the answer is no. Jim Jordan's a bright guy. Jim Jordan is somebody who knows how to manipulate. Jim Jordan is that guy who knows better, but does things because he knows the faithful, the dupes, the base, the maggot hats. They're going to foam at the mouth. So when his tweet goes out, you know, more than a train, all these trains have derailed. What's Biden's infrastructure done? You know, the infrastructure plan that he voted against. It's interesting. That, again, I go back to, won't they be surprised when it's their ideology? The railroad tracks that the trains go on are not part of the government investment in infrastructure. That's paid for by the railroads. It's all of the other things that go, all of the access routes, all of the ports going in, all of that stuff that is part of the infrastructure bill. Perfect example. I'm sure everyone's seen the Instagram, TikTok, whatever video it is, of the truck going over a railroad pass, over a railroad tracks, and then getting stuck because it was a low bridge, you know, it was a low trailer going over a huge hump because, you know, the roads were lower, and he got stuck there teetering on the tracks, and a train hit him, and, you know, it was something to watch. Nobody really got hurt, but it's that stuff. It's those roads going up to that you fix. That's the infrastructure, not the tracks. So again, the ideology is, you know, do you not get what it is that you stand for? Privatization? If there is problems with the tracks, it's the railroad's responsibility. It's their problem. But Jim Jordan knows that. But it's easy to go, well, where's your infrastructure bill now, Mr. Smart Guy? And the other part of this is it was just signed, a year and a half ago. It takes time to get things moving. You don't just snap your fingers and go, oh, done. We signed the bill. It's done. That was quick. Now, what I find interesting is you looked at Jim Jordan's other tweets. Will it take Joe Biden a longer time to visit East Palestine than it did for him to visit the southern border? Because he got both of them. He got the plume of smoke in there in Ohio. Because the thing is that, you know, Democrats hate rural people. And, you know, the border, got to bring the border into this. Reality is, and I hate to be the one to throw this out there, but who lives in Ohio? Let's see. Let's see who lives in Ohio. Oh, yeah, Jim Jordan. When was Jim Jordan there? When did Jim Jordan talk about this first? Oh, yeah, after the crazy people started making this about how can we attack Biden. Now, understand how our system works, because, again, conservatives, got to tell you, it's your ideology, not mine. Your ideology is absolute state rights, states' rights. So the governor has to request state of emergency, has to go through a whole process. There are processes in place. Have to request them to come in. That's part of the system. Now, we are seeing the federal government moving in there. We've seen the EPA there. And of course, you know, the Republicans get in their moment, go, well, if the EPA thinks this water is safe to drink, maybe they should drink it. And I'm going, okay, well, here, this is where we can agree. We can come around, coalesce around the idea that things aren't safe, that these corporations pollute, that these corporations do damage that never really gets fixed. Okay, where's your legislation to fix that? Where's your legislation to get truckloads or trainloads of water to come in to get these folks what they need? Where's your legislation? Again, you're a legislator. Your tool to fix problems is proposing legislation. That's your tool. That's what you do. But they don't have any of this. It's all about the show. It's all about the performance. Because again, it's their ideology. Their ideology has brought us here. This is 40, 50 years of neoliberal supply-side voodoo Reaganomics. This is screaming that the government can't do anything, the government shouldn't do anything, we need to privatize, profitize everything. And look, we've done a masterful job of doing that. Republicans are hell-bent on privatizing and profitizing every aspect of your life. You know, go to conservative states. We were in Florida over Christmas. Everywhere we went, you were digging into your pocket. Everywhere you went. You drove down the road, you got a toll. You know, we just got the bill for our tolls while driving around Florida, because we didn't have a Florida pass or a Sun pass or what, I forget what it's called. But we had to go where you had to go, so that way you got to pay the toll. So we got the Florida tax bill, and we paid it because, you know, we used the roads. I knew where I was going. But every place we went, we were digging into our pockets. You go to a public park, got to dig into your pocket. That's conservative world. That's their ideology. Their ideology is to put everything in the hands of the private sector, whose job is what? Again, understanding what the free market is, what the free market capitalism is and what it isn't, kind of important. Private businesses operate for one reason only, enriching themselves, making money, profit, feeding the shareholders. The widgets and the whatnots that they create, secondary. And the thing is it wasn't always this way. It's when the smart people, the quote-unquote smart people, the bean counters and all the MBAs said, you know, we can squeeze some more efficiency out of this and make some more profit. I get emails from people all the time who share their life stories with me, and I'm so grateful for that. I had a guy, today send me an email saying, about how, he worked for a small to mid-sized company, how they gave them, health care, they gave them a pension, there were Christmas parties, there were, it was a family-run business. It was a family kind of environment. That people, you worked hard, but you were dedicated because the company was dedicated to you. Now, this guy is in his 70s telling me about this job that he had for years and how it was just, I guess, recently bought up by some massive conglomerate. And, there's going to be no more Christmas parties. There are going to be no more, defined benefit pension funds. There's going to be none of that stuff. And this is the ideology that the right has pushed on us and some corporate Democrats. I'm not letting them off the hook either. As a working person, both parties have kind of sucked for working people. It's just that Democrats haven't been as bad. So when I look at these stories and these people share these wonderful stories of their lives and the work that they've done and the pride that they took into it, you know, I think back to those people I met as a kid. You know, my grandparents' generation who, you know, fought for good wages, for good benefits, for opportunity, who stood together and created. And, you know, we're in this moment again, this Republican ideology of hooray for me and the one who dies with the most toys wins and greed is good. That Reaganomic era thinking has just pedal to the metal on steroids, has infected our every thought. And I look at even this, you know, we're still not talking about Norfolk Southern, who's had now two railroad derailments. We're still not talking about how we hold them accountable for the people whose lives are completely uprooted. When do we get to that? When do we get Republicans to come on board? Because look, I'm looking around and I'm seeing a lot of Democrats going, hey, we're going to hold them accountable. Tomorrow on the program, we're going to have a Pennsylvania Representative Chris DeLuzio on to talk about, because it's right near his district. We're going to talk about how he's working to get information from Norfolk Southern. We need representatives who are going to stand up for working people. We need representatives who are going to fight for average, everyday working people and not just carry the water for corporate America. Look, there's going to be a pivot here very soon from the Republicans. There's going to be. And it's going to be blamed on the worker. It's going to be blamed on government regulation. When the reality is, you go back to the Trump years, they set aside all the things the Obama folks were trying to do to stop the bomb trains and stop the kind of things that are going on. Deregulation. And how many of my Republican friends, well, you know, deregulation's good. It's job killer. You want to regulate everybody out of work. No, I want jobs to be safe. I want people to have the opportunity when they go to work to go home at the end of the day. And fortunately, in both of these derailments, fortunately, from what I've seen, nobody has died. The one in East Palestine could have been really, really bad. These are warning signals. These are wake-up calls. These are moments to say, how do we make sure this doesn't happen again, as opposed to going, well, it's Joe Biden's fault. Or as the one person said, Joe Biden signed an executive order. This is that moment where we as working people, we as people who live in cities and towns and in rural and in urban areas across this country should be coming together and going, you know what? I want to be safe. I don't want to have to worry about trains derailing. I don't want to worry about things being falling out of the sky. I don't want to worry about these things. I don't want to worry if my water is clean or my air is clean to breathe. I don't want to worry if my kids are going to be infected by who knows what craziness comes off these derailments. And we still don't know. But here's the bottom line. My faith and my trust is still in those government bureaucrats whose job it is to keep us safe at the EPA and other places. I will take them over corporate America any day, whose job it is to hush up, cover up, and mitigate their liability. All of these arguments come down to very simple points. And that very simple point is which side are you on? It's that old labor frame. Which side are you on? Are you on the side of the wealthy and the powerful and big corporations, or are you on the side of the poor and the working class? Because, you know, as my high school government teacher said, you're going to end up paying for both of them. And in this, we probably will. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Going to take a quick break. Right back after this. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1870. That was the day the powerful labor orator Leonora O'Reilly was born to an Irish immigrant garment worker in New York City. During her lifetime, Leonora left her special mark on the labor movement as a member of some of the leading organizations of working people of her day. At age 11, she went to work at a collar-making factory. By 16, she joined the Knights of Labor. Her activism as a feminist, suffragist, and trade union organizer led her to help form a chapter for women workers as part of the United Garment Workers of America. Leonora also helped to found the Women's Trade Union League chapter in New York. Although Leonora helped to found these women's organizations, she continued to push for men's unions to open up their doors to women members. She believed it would take men and women working together to improve labor conditions. Her skill as an orator put her in great demand. At the peak of her career as an organizer, she averaged one speech a day. After giving a speech to a large union of New York telegraphers, their newsletter declared, "There is no record anywhere of a more magnificent speech than the one delivered by Miss O'Reilly." Leonora was a founding member of the organization that eventually became the NAACP. She spoke frequently about women's suffrage. In 1912, she appeared before a joint Senate committee to testify about the need for women to gain access to the ballot box, where she lived up to her fiery reputation, declaring, "You cannot and will not make laws for us. We must make laws for ourselves. We working women need the ballot for self-protection. That is all there is to it." Like what you hear? Check out more at laborhistoryin2.com.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
So Tesla evidently needs to recall, what is it, about 362,000 U.S. vehicles, I guess, to update their full self-driving beta software. I don't know if you've seen the videos that are on social media of the drunk couple. I don't know, if the passed out couple. The assumption is they were drunk. Who are just tooling down the highway on autopilot, passed out completely. And I'm going, I don't know how you do that. As someone who's driven, you know, a couple million miles, you know, I don't know how you put that kind of faith in any of this. And again, I don't know how you're going to, I don't know how as a society we're going to put faith in this, these kind of systems anytime soon. But there they were. The argument, I guess, is that the driver assistance system didn't meet the traffic safety laws and could actually create crashes. Tesla said that the software allows the vehicle the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, something else. I'm remembering the story. I don't have it in front of me. That the software would allow the vehicle to exceed speed limits and travel through in intersections in an unlawful and unpredictable manner. So basically, it could just go. And, you know, I've had people, you know, ask me, you know, do you think we're going to go to automated vehicles anytime soon? Going, yeah, it's coming. It's coming quickly. In fact, there was a story that Amazon is already shuttling their workers in California, I guess a mile or two from the parking lot to one of their distribution areas. This Zoox, I guess, is the name of the company that Amazon bought a year ago or so. But, you know, it's a startup, I guess, about 9 years old. They have these weird looking things, no driver, no steering wheel, no ability to drive. But it's just like a car with just a box with wheels and drives you back and forth. Doesn't turn around, just goes back and forth. And I see that being the first wave. We're going to get, you know, people shuttling back and forth. You're going to see, you know, controlled routes. That's going to happen. They're going to do it to trucks. It's going to happen. They've been doing it already for a number of years. But I do see at some point them saying it's okay for trucks to get, you know, like here where I'm at in Pennsylvania, put them on the turnpike, let them drive all the way to Chicago along the Pennsylvania, Ohio, Indiana pike, where there's no turns, there's not a lot of traffic, there's not a lot of turning, there's not a lot of lane changing, it just stays in the one lane like a virtual railroad. I see that happening first. And I see it happening in convoys, so people aren't cutting in and out of them and all that. I see that happening first. But eventually, you know, in my lifetime, we probably will see, you know, automated vehicles on the road. It's probably going to happen. And that's kind of a scary proposition. Now, on the Tesla front, I thought it was interesting. You know, someone sent me a comment by Joe Rogan. I haven't paid much attention to Rogan. Interesting guy, but he was talking to the Twitter Files guy on his podcast, and the clip that was sent to me, Rogan was saying how, you know, Musk was the hero of the left, of the progressives, and, you know, because of the electric car stuff. And I go, I don't remember him being the hero of the left. I mean, he wasn't my hero. He was a billionaire, and I am extraordinarily distrustful of the kind of massive wealth accumulation that you see in the hands of Musk and Bezos and Gates and you know, Buffett and the rest of them. I don't think that is good for society. I don't think it's good for a democracy. I don't think it's good for society to have someone with that kind of power. And if you look at what Musk is doing at Twitter, and this was his argument that, you know, he's opening up Twitter. You know, Twitter's now a free speech zone. So people can say all the horrible things that they feel that they're being bottled up. And I look at some of the comments that people send to me, and I don't spend a lot of time on the trolls, but vile stuff. And as I've said, you know, social media allows people to be the worst versions of themselves. And you see that time and time and time again. But I found it interesting that Rogan took the position that, well, the left used to love him, but now that he's destroyed Twitter, the left hates him, says he's Hitler. And I'm going, really? Did I miss that part of the conversation? And look, I'm not saying that there's no one out there saying, there are probably fringe elements saying this kind of stuff, but it's not the progressive left as a whole. I think most people, I think the mass of society is where I'm at, distrustful of the kind of wealth and power that we give individuals over our policies. That's what's frightening to me. If he's mean to people on Twitter, I don't care about that. But it's the power that they wield because of the wealth that they have. That's the kind of thing that's a little concerning. And the weird thing is I look at the fact that Republicans, you know, doing the Twitter things because the Twitter files, they seem really silent on Musk manipulating Twitter for his own purposes. It's really kind of bizarre if you think about it. Now, again, their ideology tells us that they believe private corporations should be able to do whatever they want to do. That's what they tell us they believe, unless it affects them. And then it's, well, we're gonna have hearings. We're going to have all kinds of craziness. In fact, evidently, they're going to be taking the show on the road to have, you know, blockbuster, you know, hearings all over the place. But I look at this, and we're in this weird moment where you've got people who are pushing this ideology and you know, rewriting kind of history, going, oh, the left loved Musk, and now they hate him because of Twitter. And you go, no, I don't know that they really loved him. I think they loved, you know, the electric car. Him, not so much. But it's interesting on how the messaging gets wrapped up. And as I said, you know, the sad reality is, you know, social media is the place where people are the worst versions of themselves. And, you know, a lot of podcasts are the same thing. But I look at, you know, some of the stuff that's being thrown out there. For instance, Nikki Haley's running for president. Ann Coulter, you know, went on this, you know, this rant about how, you know, Nikki Haley should go back to where, I think she, well, the exact quote was, go back to your own country, was her, was her thing. She was born in South Carolina. Now, again, these are moments where we want to say what we want to say without being held accountable for it. I look at some of the stuff that gets thrown back at me on Twitter for you just attacks for no reason. I don't hear the Republicans talking about that. It's this victim game they play, and they do it very well. They did it with the IRS too. The narrative was, and they've got a powerful megaphone, the narrative was that the IRS was targeting conservatives for their conservative beliefs, when the reality is the IRS was targeting people who were trying to cheat the tax system, trying to use these 912 groups and these Tea Party groups and, you know, all of these, you know, these quote-unquote education groups, who are just political organizations, to get around paying taxes. Now, for me, I've always said none of these, the nonprofit world that we've allowed to grow up around us should be destroyed. You want to fund an ideological campaign? You pay taxes. You want to fund a church? I think you should pay taxes. I don't think it would stop people from doing these things, but we wouldn't be paying for it. And I don't hear anybody screaming about that, and I think we should. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@therickssmithshow.com. I'm going to take a quick break. When we come back, our good friend Sarah Burris is going to be here from Raw Story to share some thoughts on the top stories of the day. Back after this.
You are listening to WAUK 540 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha, always streaming on the Civic Media app.